What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Nittany Blues podcast, where we talk Penn State football, basketball, wrestling, and all things Nittany Lions. Nittany Blues is the official Penn State podcast of the College Huddle. To learn more about the College Huddle, you can visit thecollegehuddle.com. Hope that you're all doing well out there. Vince and Andrew joining you as always. We've got a lot of stuff to cover in this particular episode. We've got some Olympic team trials recap stuff going on for wrestling. We've got the NFL draft coming up this week, so we're definitely going to cover that. And then we also have a slew of other updates from Penn State programs and teams that are continuing to do big things and making us proud. So before we get into all that, though, Vince, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Spring's around the corner. Temperatures are slowly getting warmer, so really excited about that. Got summer coming up very soon. So as a teacher, that's always exciting. So a lot of good things going on. And then there's also a lot of things to talk about in terms of Penn State athletics as well. So how about we get started on the Olympic trials, because there were a lot of Penn State alumni that, let's be honest, just crushed it.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So before I wrote down a bunch of notes about this, because quite frankly, if we were to talk about every storyline or anecdote from the team trials, this podcast would be probably about 4 hours long. So got some notes here, but how much of this did you watch?
Unfortunately, my schedule just did not align with when the Penn State guys were wrestling. I did try to tune in to watch on my phone. Unfortunately, like, it was either like the women's wrestling, which doesn't have Penn State alumni to my knowledge, or, you know, some guys that weren't Penn State alumni. I would have really liked to watch AB and David Taylor. I heard that match was awesome. Zane Rutherford qualifying, Mitchell Messenbrink. My guy, my favorite guy, just getting that third and final spot for the Olympic team, upsetting Jordan Burroughs. That was awesome hearing about that. Yeah, so those are a few of the storylines I caught. Andrew, what storylines did I miss? What happened? How did our Penn State guys do?
Yeah, so I'm going to try to go through some of the highlights, some of the kind of major talking points, because there's other podcasts out there that do a fantastic job of covering these in much more depth than we'll do here, because we're going to we cover a wide breadth of Penn State sports, and I don't know the X's and O's of wrestling like, a lot of these other experts do.
What are you talking about? You're our expert. You're our guy.
I can talk about it at a decent level, but when they start to talk about, some of the finer mechanics of like their single legs and the double leg blast and stuff like that, like I can't compete, and I'm fine admitting that, but I appreciate it nonetheless. So let's start here. I got a couple of overarching storylines that I wanted to talk through, and number one being the power of youth. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up was because this was one of the major storylines from the tournament, that being a bunch of current high schoolers wrestling in the Olympic team trials. A couple of them actually on Penn State's radar or already committed to the Nittany Lions, but there were a couple guys in there who aren't even, done with high school yet. There's a couple of high school sophomores and juniors that were in there wrestling with grown men and competing for a chance to go to the Olympics. Like, it was incredible to watch some of these kids. I mean, talk about Marcus Blaze and Jax Forrest. Jax Forrest is actually one that really surprised a lot of people at the Last Chance tournament. Came in, he looks like a toothpick. He comes in, he's like really scrawny, but he is so technically sound. Like, he just wrestles very well. Actually suffered a 1-point loss to defending Olympic medalist Thomas Gilman at the 57 kilo weight class. So, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's in his 30s, I believe, already won an Olympic medal, and he's out there scrapping and fighting to survive against like a high school sophomore, junior. Like, that's how good some of these kids are. And the one that I really wanted to point out to here was Connor Mirasola. Connor Mirasola is the number one ranked 190 pounder in high school wrestling. And the reason why he is so noteworthy here is because in his first match, or it might have been his second, I'm not entirely sure how the buys worked out, but he came up against Aaron Brooks. So if I were to tell you, Vince, that between the NCAA college wrestling or the NCAA wrestling season and then the Olympic / international / freestyle wrestling season, that the first person to take down Aaron Brooks was not an NCAA wrestler, but a high school
kid out of nowhere.
You'd probably think I was crazy. But that's exactly what this kid did. He went out there and he got the first lick against Aaron. He took him down. Now, granted, after Aaron eventually ended up winning, as we all know, but he had to work for it. Like he looked exhausted at the end of it. And freestyle wrestling is such an endurance contest. Like these guys are so gassed at the end of it because they can't exit the ring. They can't, you know, so there's all these rules that, you know, make it so that you have to maintain your ground. So
I like that. I'm a big fan. And it also plays to the favor of Mitchell Messenbrink and his style of wrestling.
Very much so. Yeah. Cause there's no riding time. There's no like, you know, up and like top and down position sort of deal. So yeah, for Mitch, it actually does work pretty well in his favor because his pace just works so well for that. But yeah, so Connor Mirasola though, close loss against Aaron Brooks. I mean, Aaron, you know, before we get into what he accomplished here, four-time NCAA champion, Hodge Trophy winner, one of the best college wrestlers in the entire sport's history. And this kid gave him a fight. So if that doesn't give you some optimism as a Penn State wrestling fan, like, I don't know what does. Like this kid is coming in, looks like he's probably going to wrestle at 197 if he maintains his current weight class. He's a big dude. So he could probably bump up to heavyweight if he really wanted to, but either way, extremely talented, good kid. So we should definitely be looking forward to that. And so we'll see how the rest of the dominoes fall. Like the college wrestling transfer portal activity is kind of in full effect right now. So guys are, you know, switching up programs. We'll see how active Penn State is. But when you got youngsters like Mirasola coming in, it's like, you know, you like what you got already.
Yeah. If they're going to take downs on AB, who's the best wrestler in all of college wrestling in any weight class, that is something to be really happy about.
Amen. So yeah, next point here is we got some emotional retirements from this Olympic team trials. Number one, definitely Jaden Cox, heavyweight guy, former Olympic medalist and multi-time world champion or world medalist, multi-time NCAA champion as well. He had a tough loss and he decided to hang it up. There was an emotional moment where he took off his shoes, left them at the center of the mat, signifying his end to competing in wrestling, both, you know, at the international level and just overall in competitive wrestling in general. Obviously still leaves the door open for like coaching and stuff like that, but he's not going to be lacing them up, as they say. So that was one. And then one that does hit us pretty close to home with Penn State was Mark Hall. So Mark Hall was an outstanding wrestler for the Nittany Lions, just an absolute awesome guy. Everybody that you talked to had such high praise, high opinions of Mark Hall. He decided to hang it up as well. He wrestled, I believe it was Trent Hydeley from NC State, lost that one. And at the end, edge of the mat, decided to take off his shoes as well. There was a good, you know, a good moment, good photo of him getting emotional as he was doing it, which is, you know, understandable no matter who you are when you're at this level, considering how long you've been wrestling for. I mean, like these guys have been doing it since they were like, you know, 4 years old or possibly even earlier. So, you know, the fact that we're talking about 30 years of your life doing something and then saying, you know, I don't have anything left, you know, I got to hang it up, I have to say goodbye. Like that's a tough thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough thing with sport because it's something that you're so passionate about. But when you do this, the sport at that level for such a long period of time, it just takes a toll, not only on your body physically, but definitely the mental toll of, you know, being that focused with exercise every single day. It's not like they're going out for a jog and, you know, just lifting some weights or something. Like they're going really hard, and that it's mentally hard to do that for a long period of time. So, you know, kudos to those guys. They had a really long, great career. And what better place to be able to retire than BJC where those guys have wrestled in the past?
Yep, absolutely. So it was, you know, big crowd, definitely appreciative of the moment, gave Cox a nice ovation because he did, you know, he did his thing at the center of the ring. Hall decided to kind of do it off to the sides. His was more in like the consolation side of things anyway. So it wasn't as like, you know, center stage, if you will, but still definitely an emotional moment. So next I got some Nittany Lion performances. So I'm not going to, you know, go like match by match here, just because again, that would take too long. But yeah, some definite highlights here. Carter Sturacci bumped up.
Some with the big dogs.
Yep. He decided to bump up to 86 kilos when he originally said that he was going to wrestle at 74. And to that note, Jeff Byers, who is the radio voice of Penn State wrestling, went on to the Locked On Nittany Lions show to talk about this. And basically, I mean, this guy is like, more plugged into the program than just about anybody. And his assessment of it was that he just didn't think that he was going to make the weight. He very candidly said, almost verbatim, like, if you've seen Carter without his shirt off, you know that there's not really a lot there to lose, which is true. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the guy's shredded. So yeah, to make that one weight class, which at the Olympic level, there's only 6 weight classes, which is different from the overall international world stage. That's a separate conversation, but he would essentially have had to lose like a smidge over like 10 pounds of his college wrestling weight. And given the sense that, like, you know, he'd have to do that, his leg is still iffy, wasn't sure like what the case was there, decided to bump up to 86. He did take down his first opponent, Pat Downey, who he had some, we'll just say, some spirited exchanges with on Twitter leading up to this. I'd say that Sturaci definitely got the last laugh there, completely just out hustled Downey. The guy just looked incredibly exhausted. Like, he just wasn't even trying at the end. So he got that win before falling to Trent Hydeley, since he was wrestling at a higher weight class than, you know, kind of what would align more with his college wrestling weight, if I had to, you know, kind of explain it that way. That was a close one, though. Hydeley just proved to be too good. You know, Carter still wrestling on one leg. What was interesting, though, is afterwards the storyline kind of shifted to his next year in wrestling, and he left the door open for a potential return to Penn State to try and chase an unprecedented 5th individual NCAA championship. When he was asked about it, he said that he's going to be meeting with Kale Sanderson pretty soon here, probably, because he wants to do this so that guys like Levi, like Alex Facundo, can know and kind of prepare and, you know, plan out their next year of college wrestling as well. He said that he's about 60-40 in favor of coming back. Whether that's going to swing more in the I'm not coming back field remains to be seen. Vince, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's exciting. If you're a Nittany Lion fan, he's already on, you know, most Nittany Lion fans, Mount Rushmore in terms of Penn State wrestling greats. It's exciting. We know it's going to be last minute. You know, it's going to be theatrical with Carter.
There's going to be some
excitement. You know, he likes to, you know, keep Penn State fans kind of on their toes in terms of what he's doing. So it'll be interesting. I think, you know, not winning, being able to compete in the Big Ten, I think that might motivate him to try to get a 4th Big Ten title. And it'd be pretty cool to be known as a, you know, 5-time champion. Not many people get that opportunity, you know, because of the, you know, the COVID year, obviously. But yeah, it's really exciting that he has the ability to do that. And in terms of like NIL, it really makes sense to do that, because like I see him on commercials on TV, you know, for Center County Paws, and he has the opportunity. I feel like his opportunity is bigger at Penn State than it would be in international wrestling.
Like, I'm 100% in agreement with you. And that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, I think this is the wrestling version of when Ohio State boosters were trying to get Marvin Harrison Jr. to come back to college. Because when you think about wrestling, like, Pennsylvania is pretty much wrestling capital of the USA. Like, when people think and talk about wrestling at the high school level, like, Pennsylvania is number one on almost everybody's lists. And then when you take that a step further, Penn State, undisputed kings of college wrestling right now. Like, I mean, it's not even a competition. It's Penn State, a huge gap, and then the rest of the field. And then when you take that even a step further, Carter is technically the first 4-timer in Penn State's history, one of the best that the sport has ever produced. So the NIL opportunities are going to be there. So if all those pieces are in place, it's like, why not come back? You know? So I'm in agreement with you.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where I think more people follow Penn State wrestling than follow the international scene. So I think it's one of those things that really makes sense for him to do. It's not like he's preparing for an Olympics.
Right.
And also he can give that knee some more time to recover, and, you know, he's going to be doing really well. But also at the same time, like, academically, if he's got all of his degree work done, maybe he's just mentally done going to class, because it is a grind being a student athlete, going to, you know, class all the time and keeping up with your assignments and working ahead when you have your competitions. So, you know, it'll be one of those things that we're going to be kind of holding our breath, and hopefully it goes in our favor.
Amen. So we'll see what happens with that. But so moving on to some other Nittany Lions, Mitchell Mezenbring, like you had mentioned before, he finished in third place at the 74 kilo weight class. He had an interesting road. He was really impressive. The only match that he lost was against Jordan Burroughs, who is, you know, what can only be considered one of the greatest of all time when it comes to American wrestling on the international stage. Former Olympic gold medalist, multi-time world champion gold medalist. There were some fireworks in that one. There was some chippiness going on with that. There were some boos from the State College crowd, which I wasn't very surprised by. Yeah, I wasn't surprised by, because, I mean, it's like if you know anything about a Penn State fan base or a Penn State crowd, they're going to have their guys back. Like, it doesn't matter who you are, you know, when you step on that and they feel like you wronged one of their guys, like, they're going to let you know about it. So I wasn't surprised by that. Wasn't surprised by the booing afterwards. I thought that after Jordan lost to Jason Nolf, then in the next match,
that was Nolf.
Yep. So that was a good match, though. Nolf definitely took a step forward there. Had a beautiful double leg blast against Burrow off the whistle. I thought that after that match, when the fans were screaming that at Burrows that his career was over, didn't really vibe with that. I mean, like, this is, I don't know. Like, he's just one of those guys that, like, he's done. Like, if you're a true college wrestling fan or just a wrestling fan in general, like, he's done so much, accomplished so much for the United States at times when the U.S. wasn't all that great on the international stage, that, like, kind of screaming that the guy's career is over. I mean, it's like, I get it. You're heated, you're charged, you're mad. But, like, that was literally hours ago at that point, and Nolf just won. So celebrate that. Don't, like, kind of get dragged back down in the muck. That's all I'll say on my, like, soapbox.
Yeah, I do think his comment, if he didn't make that comment towards Carter, I don't think you would have seen any of that from the fan base.
It wasn't even the thing.
It's like one of those things, like, you know, like the Michael Jordan thing, and like I took that personally. Like, I feel like the Penn State fan base, you know, kind of once they saw like Bo Nickel respond in the way he did on Twitter, I think the fan, like, people who follow Penn State wrestling follow Bo Nickel, and they're gonna kind of emotionally feel how he feels. So I think that was a more of a reaction to like Bo Nickel and people hopping on the train being like, hey, like, being like, oh, you're gonna go for Carter's bad leg, and which, I mean, you know, if you're an athlete, yeah, you do whatever it takes to win. But like Carter.
But none of it was about Carter. It was about what happened during his match with Mitchell.
Well, I think the term of like his career being over, he said that, and then Carter had the response on Twitter saying he was gonna end his career, and then ended up not like making way. So I think like the fan base was kind of piggybacking off of, you know, Bo Nickel and Carter and like having their back. Again, I'm just like a casual follower of wrestling. I'm not as, you know, knowledgeable as you are, but yeah, I think that's just the response the fan base took, because they weren't a big fan of the commentary and his comments towards Carter.
Maybe. Yeah. So either way. Yeah. So Nolf though had a good tournament. Obviously took down Jordan Burroughs, who's a legend in his own right, went up against Kyle Dake, which we'll talk about that here in a second. But some other guys, Bo Bartlett went 1-2 in his tournament, as did Alex Facundo and Max Dean. Max Dean, of course, is a few years removed from his being with the Nittany Lions, but still, you know, one of our alums, former NCAA champ, all that. Greg Kruk-Vliet went 2-2. He actually had a pretty close loss in his consolation bracket loss, which one thing I don't really vibe with the freestyle wrestling rules is you can get what's called winning by criteria. So even if you're tied at the end of a match, there's a couple ways that you could win and not go to overtime. Basically, there is no overtime in freestyle wrestling. Mm-hmm. The last person to score wins the match if the score is tied, which I don't really like, because that would be like, you know, that, you know, if a team goes down the field, hits like a 65-yard field goal miraculously to like tie up a football game, that team just wins because they scored the last points. Like I do think
that is interesting. Like I'm definitely a guy who'd be like, yeah, just have it go to overtime and like next point wins. But I do think it has a good argument in terms of the sport of wrestling. One thing I really liked that they did is they wrestled like best 2 out of 3. And the reason why I like that a lot is because sometimes a guy will get a takedown and then like plays defense the rest of the match and the time just expires. So I think that makes it a little more interesting. I think for that guy who scores first, they kind of have a big advantage because they're playing defense and waiting for the clock to run out. So I do think if that athlete who's behind is able to tie it, I think that almost forces whoever scores first to be a little more aggressive because that's something they have to worry about.
Yeah, so that's definitely a piece of it. I think it has a
good argument for it.
But there is also the inactivity clock that comes into play with Olympic freestyle wrestling. So guys can't just like cruise. They can't rest on their laurels after scoring first. Like they have to keep going because it's not like stalling in NCAAs where it's like you get a warning and then you get a point. There's literally a time clock, like a shot clock that's put on you. And if you don't score during that time, the other person just gets a point. So there is that too. I mean, I agree with you. I just kind of don't like it because I don't know if you just had like a, I don't want to say a lucky trip or like a reversal or something like that to tie it up after the guy was like the guy that you're wrestling has like more or less dominated. I don't know. I feel like there's arguments for or against it, but I don't want to spend too much time on that.
But if you're dominating, you should be up by more than one takedown.
That is true. However, there are cases where that is not always the case because let me tell you, Bo Bartlett in his final match of the tournament, he faced off against Joey McKenna and Bo worked him. Like he was all over him. I swear to God, he had him pinned in the second period. And I mean, you look at it on the TV, it looks like his shoulders are just nailed to the mat. Bo definitely dominated that match. The Nittany Lion Wrestling Club corner threw the challenge brick. They lost the challenge, which resulted in a point given to his opponent. And then at the end of the match, Bo seemingly got the better of him for a takedown and what would have been the win, but that got challenged again. It got overturned and then Bo lost. So even if you are dominating, like by all stretches of the imagination, like it doesn't all, like the scoreline doesn't always reflect that, but nonetheless. So yeah, we got those guys out of the way. Tons of other guys in action. We got Nico Megalutis, who went down to Spencer Lee and Marcus Blaze. You had Nick Lee, who worked his way through the tournament, eventually losing to Zane Rutherford. You had Levi Haynes, who lost an 0-6 match to Alex Facundo in the first match. It looked like Haynes was giving up a size advantage to Facundo in there, but Facundo wrestled very well. And then he lost to Alex Marinelli of the Hawkeye Wrestling Club, 7-11. Vincenzo Joseph, your new favorite guy, Vince. He went 0-2, unfortunately. He lost 6-6 on criteria in his first match, and then he forfeited his next match. I think he might have been dealing with a health issue.
Now I don't like the role because my guy lost because of the role.
Of course, yeah. This is all relative. And then outside of those guys, we had Jennifer Page, who is in women's freestyle wrestling at 62 kilos. She's part of the PSU Regional Training Center, the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club. She went 1-1 and she did not compete in the consolations. I think she might have also been dealing with a health issue, but nonetheless, so overall pretty good showing. But the real fireworks then began in the finals. That is the 2 out of 3 series that you were talking about, Vince. So in the challenge tournament, it was just, you know, one match decides the winner, and then you had a consolation bracket to determine third and fourth place and so on. But yeah, in the finals though, the challengers were taking on the, you know, kind of the kings, if you will, of those weight classes. 2 out of 3. So going in order here, I'm gonna save 86 for last for obvious reasons, but starting at 57 kilos, we had Spencer Lee defeating Thomas Gilman. This was one that a lot of people have been looking forward to for a long time because Thomas Gilman also wrestled for Iowa like Lee did. Same weight class, same everything. Gilman is a former NCAA champion. Lee is a 3-time NCAA champion, multi-time Hodge winner, extremely talented dude. And Lee took him down 2-0. That was Lee just looked too good, too strong. Ended up pinning Gilman in the second match to sweep the series. So that was unfortunately one member of the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club that did not win the tournament. So yeah, Lee is going to be traveling to Turkey here in a couple of weeks to try and qualify the 57 kilogram weight class for the United States for the Olympic Games. So he has to place top three in that tournament in order for the United States to be represented in that event in Paris. So, you know, all of us, even though we are Nittany Lions, we're going to be rooting for him. We want to see our Americans taking home a gold, because it's going to be tough to see anybody beating Lee. He looked really good. So got 57, 65. This was all Penn State action. This was Zane Rutherford versus Nick Lee. Both of these guys, multi-time NCAA champions for Penn State. Zane Rutherford, only two guys for Penn State to ever win multiple Hodge trophies. So extremely talented dudes. Zane got the better of Lee 2-0 as well. Very close matches. Could see the respect that these guys had for each other. They were cheering each other on in the semifinals leading up to this best 2 out of 3 series, which was awesome to see. They won both their matches at kind of like a close time. And so they walked off together. So that was like kind of a cool moment. Like, you see these two guys who are literally going to be battling it out for a chance to go to the Olympics, and they're just like the best of buds. Like, I thought that was kind of cool. And so Zane, also similar to Lee, has to go to Istanbul to try and qualify the 65 kilo weight class for the United States. Even though Zane is a reigning world champion, but at a different weight class, not at the weight class for the Olympics for the United States. There's kind of a bit of, you know, weird things that goes on with that. But either way, so similar to Lee, he has to place top three in order to go to the Olympics. So we're especially going to be rooting for Zane here pretty shortly.
Yeah, so then, fun little sidebar though, actually, you brought up Istanbul. One of my college professors was from Turkey, and I think he was like an alternate for the Turkish like wrestling team, as like this small guy. So really? That's a fun little sidebar.
That is cool. Like right
but
now.
You can go on. Currently. It was like back in the day, so it would have been he's a lot older than us, but he was one of my professors, and he was, you know, like he did like principles of conditioning and like a soccer class. So yeah, he would sometimes talk about, you know, like wrestling and stuff like that and sport. So it was pretty cool hearing some of those stories.
Awesome. I mean, that's kind of cool. Like, if you're a reserve for the Olympics, you're still pretty damn good at what you do.
Yeah.
We'll just put it that way. Cool. Yeah, so that was 65. Next, we got 74. This is already a qualified weight class. It was an all Nittany Lion Wrestling Club affair. It was Kyle Dake versus Jason Nolf. Kyle Dake, of course, four-time NCAA champion from Cornell. Jason Nolf is a three-time NCAA champion from Penn State. So two very talented dudes. Like we said before, Jason Nolf took down Jordan Burroughs in the match before. So this was kind of his shot, but Dake just proved to be too strong, too fast, too skilled. I mean, the guy is really, really good. So no shame in that, but we do get a second Nittany Lion Wrestling Club team member into the Olympics alongside Zane Rutherford, you know, with the stipulation, of course, that Rutherford is going to qualify the weight. This was actually an emotional one for Dake as well, because I believe it was something like less than 10 days before the Olympic team trials took place. Dake's father passed away. So it was an emotional ending. So you feel good that he was able to kind of get that win. Even if our full-time Nittany Lion didn't get the win, you could feel good that this guy is going to be doing his dad proud, going to be representing the United States and going for a gold that he wasn't able to get in Japan. So we're going to be rooting for Kyle. He's also the only guy to ever beat David Taylor in the NCAA finals. He did it twice.
Wow.
Yeah. So the guy's really freaking good. So like I said, I'm going to skip 86 here for a moment. Let's go to 97. We got Kyle Snyder versus Isaac Trumbull. And Kyle Snyder is a former Buckeye, but now he's a member of the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club. He has been for a while. That was actually a point of, we'll just call them some heated emotions from the Buckeye faithful when that news was passed down. I mean, I still remember the firestorm that happened on Twitter when he announced that, but
he's trying to win, man.
Yeah. I mean, well, and the results kind of speak for themselves. So this is, he won his series 2-0 over Isaac Trumbull, just kind of proved to be too experienced, too skilled, too good. One of those deals. This is going to be his third Olympics that he has qualified for, which is really impressive. I mean, like the guy's literally been going to Olympics since he was just about like a freshman in college. So the guy is really freaking good. So got another Nittany Lion Wrestling Club member in there at 125. These are the big dudes. We got Mason Paris and Hayden Zilmer. Mason Paris is the former Wolverine who took down Greg Kirkvliet in the NCAA finals. That was previous to the most recent one. Hodge winner at the heavyweight weight class. Really good. He won that series 2-0 as well, I believe. So he is a member of the Cliff Keen Wrestling Club out of Michigan, that regional training center. So he's going to be representing the United States there. That weight is already qualified. And that brings us then to 86 kilos. And this was kind of the marquee matchup, the strength versus strength. We got, I'm trying to think of another analogy that I can use here. Just, you know,
Battle of the Titans.
I mean, that's basically the only way you could put it. You got Aaron Brooks reigning the four-time national champion from Penn State, most recent Hodge Trophy winner, just on an absolute tear, hasn't lost a match in years, you know, when it comes to the NCAA stage as well as on the world stage. And so somebody can check me on that if I'm wrong on that, but it just seemed like the guy hadn't been in any real trouble in a long time in a wrestling match. And his opponent was David Taylor, the reigning Olympic gold medalist at 86 kilos, four-time national champion, two-time NCAA champion for Penn State, two-time Hodge Trophy winner, one of the best that Kale has ever produced out of state college. And, you know, just one of the first guys actually that Kale really brought to Penn State to bring it to the prominence that it's enjoying right now. So Nittany Lion legend in almost every aspect of the word. And this was the one that everybody was most excited about because many people consider David Taylor to be the pound for pound best wrestler in the world. Like regardless of weight class, they considered this guy to be the best. And they thought Brooks going to give him a good fight. It's going to be an awesome series. Great match. The whole bit. Brooks dominated him. Like it wasn't even all that close because Brooks just looked faster. He looked stronger and he looked fresher. And this is even coming off of Brooks working through the challenge tournament to even get a shot at Taylor. Taylor only had to wrestle this best two out of three series, and Brooks looked fresh. He looked hungry and he was really, really good. Like David just couldn't really attack. Everything that he did, Brooks had an answer for. And usually when David was going on the offensive, it turned into points for Brooks because he was able to utilize his leverage, rely on his defense, great sprawling technique to kind of get the counter for the takedown for himself and the 2 points. So Brooks ended up winning the series 2-0. The weight is already qualified. So Brooks is going to the Olympics as the 86 kilogram weight class for the United States. And this was a bittersweet moment. Like I watched this live and that's really the only way that I could describe it. Like you're pumped for Brooks, but you're also like mourning the loss for David Taylor. Because like this is a guy who everybody's been rooting for, especially from Penn State for so long because of his ability to succeed and show off, like kind of just show what he can do on the international stage. And Brooks just comes in and works him. Like there's no other way to put it. And then at the end of the match, I think this, like what really just kind of put an exclamation point on this performance for Brooks was just him showing what kind of guy he was. Because at the end of this match, instead of running around the ring, screaming, flexing, jumping, like, you know, the guy just made his first Olympics. Like, let's just name it what it is. He made the Olympics as a wrestler. Like, this is something that he's been dreaming about probably for his entire life that he's been putting on a singlet. Mm-hmm. Like, this has been one of the, like, peak of the mountaintop goals that he had ever thought that he wanted to achieve. And instead of celebrating, losing his mind, he goes and he hugs David, who's kneeling in the center of the mat, just kind of taking in the moment, just kind of realizing that he lost his shot. He goes and he hugs him. He shares a message for him that, you know, is probably just, you know, something sincere. I mean, these guys train together. They scrap mm-hmm. together. They, you know, they're like, these guys have spent so much time training together that, like it's probably a relationship that's close to being brothers at this point. I mean, Brooks was his training partner, like his warm-up partner when he won gold in in the Japan games. So these are guys who are extremely close, and Brooks knew kind of what that moment meant, that it wasn't just him winning his spot. It was also about David losing his. And
yeah,
I think the reverence that he showed for that moment just speaks volumes to the kind of guy and the kind of competitor that he is.
Yeah. And I think sports, like endurance sport and wrestling, where you just have to train so hard and you have to train, you typically train with other people. It's, yeah, you know, it's one of those things you definitely do through, like, form a brotherhood, just like going through the pain and the tough workouts. And that bond is so strong. And that, it is really hard to, you know, see someone you go to war with every single day who's essentially your teammate. Like, you know, you see them going through that pain of the pain of agony of defeat and not reaching a goal. And I think that was a, you know, a cool moment. It's kind of a bummer that, you know, wrestling's not like track where, or like triathlon, where your nation can qualify up to three athletes. So you can set, you can actually sweep the medals. Like, swimming's the same way. So it's a bummer it's not like that, but you understand it because, you know, they can only host so many athletes at an Olympic game. So it's like, there's only a certain amount of hotel rooms for everybody. So that is difficult. You know, definitely a bummer for David Taylor, but really excited for AB. Like, you know, it couldn't go to a better guy, but at the same time, it's one of those things where, you know, you can, it sucks seeing a, you know, a guy with the pedigree and class of David Taylor have to, you know, losing that way. But, you know, that's what makes so sports so beautiful and so exciting is moments like this.
Yeah. I think that's well said, you know, so we can put our full energy, hype and excitement though into Aaron continuing to build his legend, the guy who's representing Penn State with the utmost class, performing at the highest level, higher than anybody, you know, maybe would have expected him so early on in his post Penn State career. So we can just put all of our energy into hoping that he brings home the gold. There was a lot of like kind of jokes and memes out there that Hassan or that Yazdani, who David has wrestled for so long now at the 86 kilo weight class, was just looking through binoculars at the match, was just going, "Oh my God," because Brooks was just that good. So, well, we'll see what happens. I mean, Brooks, he's just the guy's on a different level. He's got a different gear, and we're going to see exactly what that can do against the best of the best. He did it against the best of the best. Now it's time to see what he can do against the best of the rest of the world.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as there's no like stud high schoolers trying to get a takedown on him, I think we'll be good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, his kryptonite is giving up one takedown to a high school wrestler. But cool. Yep. So all in all, we had 1, 2, 3, 4 Nittany Lion Wrestling Club members make what is hopefully going to be the complete men's freestyle Olympic team. There's two guys who wrestled for the Nittany Lions in Zane Rutherford and Aaron Brooks. Unfortunately, guys like Jason Nolf, Nick Lee, and David Taylor fell short, but you know, those guys are part of the national team as the runner ups, as are guys like Mitchell Mezenbrink, who took home third place, like we mentioned before. So all in all, pretty good weekend of wrestling for Penn State, which is, you know, just a thing that we could say on repeat for just about everything that Penn State does when it comes to wrestling, is that they had a pretty good showing.
Yeah. Now, I thought I saw somewhere where Mezenbrink qualified for the Olympics, but he got third.
Well, so he's part of the national team. So there's certain events that depending on where you place, puts you on the national team. So he's not like, he's not an Olympian, but he is part of the national team. So if needed, he would be kind of like the reserve to the reserve at the 74 kilo weight class that would represent the United States. And when, I mean, I'm not super well versed in like non-Olympic time, like wrestling selections, but when it comes to like the United States on the world stage, he would then be like the third person that they'd put out there to try and win at the 74 kilo class. So like at the next world championships, they'd probably go to like Kyle Dake, then Jason Nolf, and then Mitchell Mezenbrink.
Okay, that makes sense. So yeah. It's essentially that he's the second alternate.
Basically, yes.
Gotcha. Yep. Well, that's a bummer because I thought Messenberg made the Olympics and I was like so hyped for him.
His time is coming. Like he's still extremely young. I mean, he's like he brought his game to the trials. I mean, he was out there doing his thing, messing with his opponents, you know, to the frustration of guys like even Jordan Burroughs, wrestling hard, wrestling fast, wrestling with a lot of fun. You could just tell the dude was just loving the moment. He was like dancing around the ring like he was in the NCAA season. Just so much pace, just so much activity. And like when we're talking about guys like getting gassed in this sport, because you know it's such an endurance contest with the freestyle rules and regulations, like Messenbrink is like a death knell for some of these guys. Like they just can't keep up. So
I just, yeah. I love his style. Like I get exhausted, like watching him wrestle. And this is coming from like a triathlete who did endurance sport at the college level. So like I get exhausted watching him go. So like that's saying something. Like
good stuff. So that's all I got. I mean, that was a lot. Didn't want to inundate this episode with that, but I think that those are some of the highlights. I mean, so much happening through that. I mean, we didn't even get into like any of the Greco-Roman stuff. I mean, granted, none of the Penn State guys were really competing in that, but I mean, if you loved wrestling, State College was the place to be, and there was a show. It was an absolute show for anybody who loves the sport. So, Vince, you got anything else here, or do you want to talk some NFL draft?
Yeah, we know how to throw in a show in Happy Valley. What can I say?
Amen. All right, so we got the NFL draft. We are switching from wrestling to football. And so starting on this Thursday, the 2024 NFL draft is going to take place. There is a slew of Nittany Lions who are hoping to have their names called, a couple of whom have a decent chance to have their name called in the first round. And so, Vince, what are your thoughts on this draft? What do you think of the prospects of some of the guys from the blue and white that are hoping to get drafted?
I think some guys are going to make a lot of money. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really excited, especially along the lines. You obviously got Olufoshinu up there. You got Chop Robinson, Adisa Isaac, Kalen King, Theo Johnson, among others. Who are you most excited to see where they go? And who do you think might surprise and go higher than you'd expect?
No, man, that's a tough one. I'm really excited to see where Fashanu goes, I think, first and foremost, because I think his situation is going to be exciting to see, like with this run on quarterback that's likely going to happen at the beginning of the first round. I could see a team kind of swinging back around into the first round to take an offensive tackle like him to, you know, add some protection for the young quarterback that a team drafts. So I'm looking at the Bears. Like, you know, they have pick number one and they have pick number nine. Who's to say that they won't use their two top 10 picks on Caleb Williams and Olufashinu? Or, you know, maybe the Commanders might swing back into the first round. They might try to make some trades to get back into the first round. They have a new ownership group, so they're trying to be smart. They're trying to be savvy. They're trying to plan for the future. I could see them trying to make a move to get back into the first round after picking second. So I'm excited to see where he lands because, I mean, we know that the guy's supremely talented. He's, you know, has the chance to be a day one starter kind of guy. So I'm really excited to see where he goes. And then the guy who I think is really going to maybe surprise some people, but maybe not us, is Theo. I think Theo has a chance to go like high second round, and just kind of looking at like some of the teams that are in need of a tight end. I mean, you got teams like the Seahawks, you've got the Bengals, you've got the Jets. So you have to imagine that one of those teams is probably going to make a move to go get Brock Bowers. But when you start to like look around at some of the other tight ends that are there, I mean, you have the guy from Texas, but when you want to talk about a guy who has so much potential, maybe a bit of a project, but when you're talking about pure athleticism at the position, like you don't really get much more athletic than what Theo Johnson brings to the table. I mean, he damn near tested out of the arena at the NFL combine. So I think that he has the potential to go kind of first half of the second round, maybe surprise a couple people, like where they say, wow, you know, like this is a little bit of a project, but there's the potential's there. You know, you could just hear like Mel Kiper, like saying that kind of stuff. But I could see one of these teams taking a flyer, or not really a flyer, but, you know, taking him early on in the second round because of potential that's there. I mean, he's a rangy tight end, super athletic, great hands, all like everything that you'd want in kind of like your modern NFL tight end sort of deal. So I'm really excited about those two guys. What about you?
I'm really excited about Adisa Isaac. He's a guy I think could get drafted higher than a lot of people expect. Really excited about Kalen King. I feel like some of the other corners are getting pretty hyped up. And, you know, he's a guy who played pretty solid at Penn State. People didn't really throw his way. And I think that might be a contributing factor to part of the reason why he's not maybe getting as much buzz. So he's a guy I think could maybe go higher than projected. But I got a fun little exercise here. Over-unders. So we're going to go back to our over-unders. And I took the Pro Football Focus number in terms of prospects, and you're going to tell me if they're going to get drafted higher or lower than their number.
Ooh, okay. I like this.
All right. So our first one on the board, Olufoshinu, number 7 on the big board. Do you think he gets drafted before or after number 7?
I think he's going to go after number 7. I think in terms of ability, he should go before 7, but I think there's going to be such a run on quarterbacks in the first like 5 or 6 picks. And then I think you gotta throw Brock Bowers into there. And I think you also gotta throw like Joe Alt in there, because I think recently the buzz around Olu, you know, fairly or not, has kind of declined a little bit. So I don't think that Olu is going to be the first offensive tackle taken off the board. So I'm going to say under or later, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm going to go under as well. I think he'll be drafted later. And my reasoning for this is you got Joe Alt there at 7, who I think is going to go at 7. I think the 3 quarterbacks will go off the board early, at least 3. Then you got Marvin Harrison Jr. There's been some buzz about some teams wanting to trade up to number 5 with the Chargers to try and get one of the wide receivers. Same with the Giants. They've been kind of linked to wide receivers. They have very low in yards after catch. So that's kind of the top 7 and the reasoning for that. You've seen on just about every mock draft, Dallas Turner being the first defender to the Atlanta Falcons. I do think the Bears have some interest. I think that would be a good way for them to go. Olu has the best technique in terms of pass protection. He's really refined there, but you know what isn't quite as strong in the run game, and you know has some smaller hands. Some teams will be concerned about that, I'm sure. So I do think you might see him slide a little bit just because it is a very deep tackle class, maybe due to those concerns. Like maybe people think he might end up like an Andre Dillard, who in that draft was regarded as the best pass protector, but you know, not as physical in the run game. So there's some potential there. I think he could go anywhere from number 9 to the Bears, but maybe they want to try to get a guy like a Roma Dunze. He could still potentially be on the board there. So, and you know, you saw the Bengals, everyone thought they were going to take a lineman and they draft Ja'Marr Chase, and that ends up working out. So it's tough to predict which way the GMs are going to build the roster. So I think he could go as early with the Bears at number 9, but also like maybe as late to number 21 at the Dolphins, because they need some offensive line help. And it, you know, there's a couple good corners up there, Quinyon Mitchell, who I think there's been some buzz about Eagles trying to get a corner. I think he's the only guy worthy of trading up for. He's been getting a lot of Sauce Gardner comparisons, I think is a stud. So I'd be happy if Howie made that move. But outside of that, I think he's good to stay put at 22 or even possibly trade down and still be able to land a good corner. So that's why I have Olu under that number, getting drafted later. Next person on the big board, Chop Robinson at 23. Do you think he gets drafted before or after 23?
I'm going to say after here as well. I'm seeing late first round for Chop, and I think the reason is because there's a couple of other edges that are currently rated a bit higher than he is as far as like their draft prospects go. or at least like from what I've seen, not necessarily on the Pro Football Focus, obviously, since that's what you're using as the basis for this exercise. But similar to Olu, like he's a guy who I think is worthy and skilled enough to go earlier than this projection would kind of point to, but I'm seeing late first round. So looking at like maybe like pick 25 to 32.
Yeah, I think he's going to be in that similar range. I think he'll be somewhere between that, you know, 26 to 30 type of range, depending on what team likes him. The Bucs have been a team at 26 that's linked to him. He could go higher. There is a little potential there. Obviously, I think teams like Dallas Turner a lot just because of really the projection there. He's a big projection guy. Leatu Latu, that a lot of people think that he's the best edge in the draft by far, but there is a lot of concern with his neck injury. So you don't know. We obviously don't have that medical information, and he's also going to be 24. So that's a factor that plays in. You got Jared Verse, who a lot of teams are into. But after that, I think there's a really good shot. He's the fourth edge off the board. It just depends where he goes. But also at the same time, edge is one of the positions that, you know, the NFL really values. So maybe it's one of those things where, hey, like maybe he gets, you know, drafted a little higher than he should just because of position. But I do think in terms of where the draft is really good this year, it is positions that the NFL values, like NFL values tackle and offensive line. A lot of good linemen this year, especially early on in the draft. Got some good corners in the draft. That's another position they value a lot. And then obviously you got the edge. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. And also there's a lot of good quarterbacks, which the NFL obviously values very much based off right. your top three picks. So it'll yep. be tough, you know, with all those positions and all the depth of those positions there, to see how it turns out. But yeah, he's a guy I would, if I had to bet my money, I'd say he gets drafted later. All right, moving on to our next guy, Adisa Isaac, over or under 44.
I'm going to go over. I'm seeing like first 10 picks of the second round for Adisa for a lot of the reasons why or that you mentioned before. Just a guy who has all the skill attributes you'd want at the edge spot, proven production, got a ton of love at the Senior Bowl, just seemed to be a guy that scouts and the reporters that were there couldn't stop buzzing about him. So I'm thinking, you know, early second round for him. So I'm going to say over.
Nice. I have over for him as well. He kind of reminds me of Arnold Ebiketie, who got drafted 36th.
Great comparison.
I think that's the range where he's going to fall. And like we talked about, edge is a position that teams value extremely in the NFL, and they will overdraft. They don't care. There's better players at linebacker or running back. Like the NFL is a, you know, you got to be able to block the pass rusher or pass rush. And that's how the game is. And yeah, that's why I think he has a lot of potential to, you know, go a lot higher. And also I don't see a big difference between him and Chop. I think they're both really good players, and it's really tough to really kind of thread the needle. Chop obviously has the better traits and the better athletic testing, but Adisa has some better numbers on the field in terms of production.
Right.
I think that's one of the areas where Chop might actually get bumped down a little bit. Kind of like, kind of reminds me of Jason Away getting drafted to the Ravens. He got drafted pretty high, even though he didn't have a lot of production in terms of sacks at Penn State, but the athletic numbers were there and the talent. And obviously he's gone on to have a very good NFL career. So I think Chop reminds me a lot of him, and Deese reminds me a lot of Arnold Ebiketie.
I think it's a pretty good comparison.
Yeah. All right. Next man on the big board, Kalen King, 115.
I'm going to say under. I don't think that his testing numbers have helped him out a lot in recent months. I mean, we know how good he is, but I'm thinking that, I mean, so what would 115 be? Like, so we're talking like end of fourth round, or
it would be like, that'd be somewhere in the fourth.
Okay. Yeah, I'm seeing like probably like round 5 or 6 for Kalen at this point. I mean, whether or not that comes to pass, I don't know, but he didn't exactly have a great combine performance. He didn't have like a stellar pro day. It wasn't like terrible or anything like that, but I don't think that he is necessarily wowing scouts right now. Whether or not that's, you know, that's indicative of his ability to perform on the field as an NFL corner, like that is not always the case, but like these numbers, these tangibles, they really matter at this stage in kind of the evaluation period. And I think that his stock has kind of been trending down, and fairly or unfairly, that's another conversation. But so I'm going to say under here.
Yeah, it's tough. I do have confidence. I'm going to differ with you on this one here. I do think, you know, like last year, there was some buzz about him being a first round pick last year, and he put on good film this year. And it only takes one team to fall in love with you. So I think he'll be pretty close to that number. If I had a maybe put a guess on it, I'd say late third, early fourth.
Okay.
So I think there'll be one team that likes him, and you know, he's our number one corner on a great defense. And you know, I think a team will give him a shot there. So I'm going to differ with you and go early on this one. All right. Next one, Hunter Norzad, 131. So this would be fifth round.
Got it. I'm going to say over. He's a talented corner. I think that you could also swing him out Norzad to be a guard if you need to. What'd you say?
Oh, I said Norzad. You said corner instead of center, so you threw me off a little bit.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you're good.
Talented center. Been very effective. I think he's a guy who you can also flip out to guard if you need to. So I actually kind of see some juice Scruggs kind of in his prospects as an NFL player. And Scruggs got some run as the center of the Houston Texans, proven to be very, very good.
And he was drafted late second round, correct?
Right.
Like late second, early third. I think it was late second.
Yeah. Yeah, you're correct. So I can honestly see Norzad being another guy who teams really like, just kind of like a great depth piece on the line, can play significant time if he needs to. So I'm going to say over.
Yeah, it's one of those numbers where I think it's a really good number. I think PFF got that one pretty good. I do think there's going to be some teams scared off that he's already 24. A lot of the teams, they look to the draft, they want to get some young talent. But, you know, you do have teams that are in win now mode, and those are the teams that are more interested in the 24-year-olds. They want guys that are ready to go. They don't got time to wait. So, you know, he has his age going against him. He does have some injuries. So obviously he's going to have to clear the team's medicals. But if I had to bet, just because he does kind of remind me in terms of ability playing to the level of Juice Scruggs, I do think there's potential for him to be drafted higher, potentially in the fourth round. I do think he'll be an early fifth round pick. That's kind of where I have him. And I think he can be a, you know, a solid guard or center on an NFL roster, or a backup at the very least.
Nice.
All right. I think we're going to agree on this next one. You know, Johnson, 133.
Oh my God. What? That's crazy. Yeah. 100% over. Like there's no chance in a day and age where Travis Kelce rules the world as the leading NFL tight end that Theo Johnson is going to be drafted in the hundreds. Like no way. Over.
Yeah. I'm on the same boat with you there. I do think that he reminds me a lot of Mike Gesicki. And Gesicki was a second round pick. So I do think that Theo is going to be a late second round, early third. I do think Mike Gesicki, I don't know, he's kind of hot and cold. Like he has some big games, but also he has some games where he doesn't put up a ton of numbers. So I do think there will definitely be a team that likes him. So I would say late second, early third. But when I'm doing my mock drafts and the mock draft simulator, he's definitely one of the players who I'm like, oh, swooping this guy up in the fifth round. This is a steal. Like, he's definitely one of those guys I've been getting in the fourth or fifth. All right, next player, Johnny Dixon, 152.
I'm going to say under, but not too under. I think 152 is right around probably the, you know, I don't want to say the correct spot, but an expected spot for him. He's a guy who has a proven track record, good NCAA corner, you know, not always locked down like you'd want in your starting NFL cornerback rotation, but still very good. So I 100% see him being drafted probably in like the late fifth or sixth round. So I'll say under.
Yeah, I'll say under is two. I think 152 is a good number for him. I think he's a guy who you'd have as a backup and maybe plays a couple games if there's an injury, special team kind of guy. I think he has the capability to do that. So I'll push him up, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does get drafted later, potentially like the sixth round.
Yeah.
Next guy on the list, Daquan Hardy, 158.
Yeah, similar to Dixon, I'm going to say under. He's a guy who I think has a lot of like football IQ. And I'm not trying to say this in like a way to like diminish his abilities as like a true corner, but he was a guy who was very good in a lot of different ways for Penn State. Also very good in special teams, obviously, as we saw, but his prospects as like as a returner in the NFL are probably pretty limited. So I'm going to stay under, but probably not by much.
I'm in the same boat there as you. I have a slight, you know, under. I think he'll get drafted a little bit earlier than that 158. I do think a lot of teams are going to be kind of scared off by his size. He's only 5'9", so he's a guy you'd expect to be in like the nickel and dime situations at the next level. However, we as Penn State fans know that he can be very good in special teams and punt return, and the NFL implementing those new kick return rules. There might be a team that would think he's a really good returner, and with those rules changing, they might be looking for a guy like that. So I do think there could potentially be one team to, you know, fall in love with him and draft him a little bit higher than that 158. All right, next guy on the list, Curtis Jacobs, 166.
I'm going to say over. I like Jacobs as a linebacker. I always have. I think that his physical attributes are going to serve him well as an NFL prospect. So I'll say over here.
Yeah, I'm going to go early as well. I think fifth round's a good place for him to go. So I do expect him to go a little bit before 166. I think he had a really good production at the college level. And I think he'll be a solid contributor, definitely within a couple years on an NFL roster. And last guy on the list, Caden Wallace, listed at 215. So that would be around a seventh round grade. Do you have him before the seventh round or after?
Man, that's tough. I'm going to say over here. Caden's a good tackle. And, you know, I think what's going to be difficult, though, is like teams in the mid to late rounds are going to be searching for more of those diamond in the rough skill players. Like, you're going to make your run on your offensive lineman probably in the first and second round. So I'm going to say over, but I'm not super confident about it.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go under here. I've just seen in the past the right side of Penn State's offensive line getting, you know, dominated at times or giving up pressures. And he was on that right side a lot of the time. I do think this past year he was a lot better. But I'm definitely more of a Drew Shelton guy on that right side. I think Drew's a better player. So I do think that there will be a team that gives him a chance. I just think it's going to end up being as a undrafted free agent.
Gotcha.
Yep. So those are all the players we had on the PFF board. I think there's any that are missing off the PFF board.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is a pretty good kind of grouping of guys from Penn State. I mean, you could also make an argument for guys like Keaton Ellis, but I think that Keaton's probably going to find his home as an undrafted free agent as well. Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good list.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there. Keaton Ellis is a fun story. you know, State College native going on to play at Penn State. So it'll be fun to see if he's able to get getting to a training camp and have a chance to compete for a roster spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So football, not wrestling, not the only sport where Penn State is dominant. Another sport is volleyball. The men's volleyball team, they were the EIVA champions. They hosted the tournament this weekend. They beat Harvard and then George Mason in the national championship game. So the men's team will be off to the NCAA tournament to face off against UC Irvine. That'll be happening Tuesday, April 30th. Thoughts on the men's volleyball team?
Yeah, just hope that they have a good showing at the NCAA tournament. When they're good, they're really good. And when they're not at their best, matches can kind of slip away from them. So I think it's really just going to depend on which version of Penn State shows up.
Yeah, and it'll be tough. I do feel like Penn State has struggled with a lot of the California teams in volleyball. But, you know, they do have a couple victories as well. So I think it depends which Penn State team shows up. And, you know, time will tell. And go Lions.
Go Lions.
Go Lions. Also have some lacrosse news. Big Ten tournament's going to be starting up this weekend, as well as men's golf. But in terms of lacrosse, we had lacrosse. They won their last matchup against Rutgers 15-9. So they'll be hosting Rutgers in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. That'll be happening at 3 p.m. at Panzer Stadium. Women's lacrosse will be hosting Ohio State at noon, right before the men, for the Big Ten tournament as well. So really good weekend to catch up on some lacrosse action. Women's softball, they had lost a doubleheader against Ohio State. However, they did bounce back. They beat St. Francis University. They won 2 out of 3 against Wisconsin. They'll be hosting Michigan this weekend. Baseball, they went 1-3 in their series over the past weekend at Michigan State. They'll be hosting Minnesota this upcoming weekend. And Wednesday night, they will be hosting the West Virginia Mountaineers at Medlar Field. So a lot of good action going on there in terms of Penn State athletics. And yeah, we have a lot of news for basketball. Have you been keeping up with the portal?
Yeah, so I just know that there's been some good news for Penn State. Obviously, Penn State lost its fair share of guys. Mike Rhodes is going to have to do some work in the portal again. They signed a top 25 recruiting class, but in today's day and age in the NIL and transfer portal world, you need to have that presence there. And it seems like Rhodes is doing a pretty solid job.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the biggest feather he has in his cap right now is having the 5 out of those 6 guys that got really significant minutes on that the Big Ten tournament team, the team who upset Illinois at home and Wisconsin. They got some dudes who can play. So the portal, big area they needed to hit was bigs. That's what they've been doing. You know, they got the center in his eye from Xavier. So he's a little bit of an undersized center at 6'8", but they did get another player who can play center. They got Northern Illinois transfer Yannick Conan Niederhauser, who is a native of Switzerland. He is 6'11", has a lot to his game. He averaged 7 points a game last year for the Huskies. So it'll be cool to see what he can bring to the roster. Also coming over since we last spoke was Eli Rice out of Nebraska. 6'8 player, very efficient scorer, scored 41% from the field, 37% from three, which is above average. That's a pretty good number. I'd be happy if I was shooting 37% from three. So I think he can be a good scorer and good presence in the front court to help out with Puff Johnson. So I think you could see Puff and Nick Kern Jr. as well as Eli Rice in a good rotation there in the front court. So definitely a really good area for Coach Rhodes establishing a front court. Did a nice job getting areas of needs. Now we just need overall roster depth. Obviously, it'd be nice to see another combo guard in there, someone who can give Ace Baldwin a breather, as well as DeMarco Dunn. Those are your two really good guards that you got coming back. But behind them, you don't really have much. So it'll be good to get some guards in. Also, they got Miles Goodman, you know, a center coming in from that, you know, loaded class that they have, that top 25 class. So that'll be interesting competition for those guys, and definitely is going to be a different roster. The women's team will also look very different. A lot of players have entered the portal that we talked about already. You can add Leilani Kapanis to that list. Really great athlete, probably their best defensive player in terms of games I went to. She just moves so well, good ball handler, can score, stud on the defensive end. So tough to see her in the portal. But something we are happy to see is Ashley Owosu. She was the first women's Penn State basketball player to get drafted in a very long time. She got drafted in the second round to the Dallas Wings. So definitely happy for her being able to play in the WNBA. She also does have the option to return to college ball. So she hasn't decided if she's going to enter the portal or go to Dallas, but Dallas will still hold her rights. Hockey, men's ice hockey, Liam Soulier, goalie for the men's ice hockey team over a very long period of time, the past few years. A lot of good memories. This past year wasn't quite as good, but he entered the portal and is transferring to Minnesota, which we know is a hockey powerhouse. So we want to wish him best of luck and thank him for his service at Penn State. And then you got Keandre Lambert-Smith in the portal, who is very interesting. So his visits were reported to be to Auburn, Texas A&M, and future opponent in the 2024 season, USC. What are your thoughts on Keandre's visits, and are you concerned about him going to USC?
No. And two reasons. One, I'm not scared of him. And two, I sent you this literally as we were recording. So it appears that his recruitment is down to Auburn and Texas A&M. So it looks like USC is out. And that's probably because
we don't need to be afraid.
Right. Not that he's not a good wide receiver. I mean, obviously I wish that he was still with Penn State, but you know, I'm not going to be scared of the guy who is leaving our program. I'll just say that. So I think that his prospects in the SEC are interesting, kind of in like some of those spread offenses. That style of football, I think, is an interesting concept for him with his speed. So, you know, I hope that he does well wherever he goes. And I think that whoever, like I said, during our college huddle stream visit, I think that whichever team gets him is going to get at least a plug and play number two receiver.
Yeah, I think so too. And you saw it at Penn State. He was great in that number three role 2 years ago when they won the Rose Bowl. Really good player out of the slot too. So has a lot to his game, and looking forward to seeing what he does, you know, even though he's not going to be in the blue and white in this upcoming season. So those are the big news we got in terms of, you know, other sports schedules, championships. We talked a lot about transfer portal players. We're going to finish off here with some basketball and the schedule, because we don't get a ton of updates until very early in the basketball season. The Big Ten is notorious for releasing that very late. I end up buying tickets before I even know who the opponents are. But some games we do know that Penn State is going to be traveling to. Just like they did last year, they played in some big games, which I think really prepared them for Big Ten play. They're going to be playing a tournament in Baltimore in November. They'll be facing off against Virginia Tech, so it'll be good to get some experience against an ACC opponent there. And then they'll play either the winner or loser, depending how the game goes, of Villanova and Virginia. So that'll be exciting. That'll be a good like regional battle. You got two PA teams, two Virginia teams, Baltimore, right on that Mason-Dixon line, very close to you, actually. So might have to make a road trip to Baltimore to check out the men's squad. Also in November, likely they'll be playing in the Daytona Beach Sunshine Slam. Last year, they had eight teams. This year, they're going to have four teams. Those four teams are going to be Penn State, Clemson, San Francisco, as well as Fordham. So those four teams will be squaring off. Matchups haven't been determined yet, but that is a place that Penn State has been reported to go. So based off of what we had with our basketball team last year and a lot of the pieces coming back, how excited are you for these matchups in Baltimore as well as or Daytona Beach?
Very. I mean, these are resume builders. So when you have a team that is looking to build on a solid first year under Mike Rhodes, despite challenges that came with building a roster largely from the transfer portal, when you got some good talent coming in, you've got good talent coming back, led by Ace Baldwin Jr., like, these are the kinds of matchups that you want.
Yeah, I'm really excited as well. You know me, I'm a big college basketball guy, so I'm definitely pretty hyped about this. Mid-Atlantic basketball is always fun, you know, going against those ACC teams. That's definitely more known as a basketball conference than a football conference. So I'm going to have a good time watching them play Virginia Tech and potentially Virginia, who is, you know, a national champion only a few years ago. So I think that'll be a good test. And Virginia has that pack line defense that they run. So I think that'll be a really good test to prepare them for Big Ten play, which we know has a lot of good defenses and is a very hard place to win on the road. So I'm really excited about that one in particular.
Good stuff. Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah. So a lot of stuff going on there. Any final thoughts or things you're excited about?
Yeah. So I think we should spend a few minutes talking about not necessarily isolated to Penn State, but college football overall. We got the update that the 2-minute warning and radio headset communication was coming to college football. You know, whether that was accelerated by what happened with Michigan, I mean, probably, but either way, so college football is now getting the 2-minute warning. It's also getting headset communication. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's fine. I think with the games were going by faster last year and teams were getting, 5 to 8 less plays each. So I think the fact that you're throwing in the 2-minute warning, I think it's not only good for, you know, strategy of the game, because you know how exciting it gets in the NFL when they run that 2-minute drill. So I think that'll be really exciting for the game, and it'll give teams a couple more plays each probably, or maybe like a play or two here and there. So I think that'll be good for the sport. And also I think it's nice to have that alignment, to have the NFL and college be a little more similar, because as a casual fan, it's easier for those fans to understand the rules. So I think it'll be exciting. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I don't really have any strong feelings for or against it. I also thought there was something to be said about being able to effectively communicate in the college game. So, you know, a lot of teams were doing like the cards and the hand signals and stuff like that. So I think there was something to be said about that, but I also don't hate, you know, if from this we get a better product of football, like more effective football. I don't think that's a bad thing for anyone. So I don't really have any like strong feelings. Like I wasn't doing like, you know, cartwheels for it, but yeah, I'm for it.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. You know, speaking of doing cartwheels, something that is really exciting, Paul Johnson. You think I'm crazy for running things like, you know, 5Ks to half marathons and my Ironmans. This guy, you know, Penn State ROTC alum, literally ran across the continent. He's been running, you know, for several weeks now across Los Angeles all the way to New York City. He made his way through State College last weekend. He was going for the fastest record, fastest time to run across a continent. Didn't get that world record, but he did end up raising a lot of money for mental health services, especially for veterans, which we can all agree is a good cause. So, you know, kudos to Paul Johnson. You're just another awesome Penn State alum, or I should say way above average awesomeness, you know, Penn State alumni. So kudos to him.
Amen. Yeah. Just a major shout out. That's an awesome achievement. Great, great cause that you're supporting with this. And yeah, I mean, it's just like, that's freaking insane.
Yeah. Awesome guy.
That's a long way to run.
That is very far. That's like literally like in Forrest Gump where he's like, I'm going to run. And then he runs across like all of America and he's like, I'm going to go home now. Well, thankfully, Mr. Johnson doesn't have to run all the way back from New York to LA. He's been working very hard, raising a lot of money for a good cause. Just an awesome dude. So kudos to him. Also, in terms of athletics and running, we have the Penn Relays. Yes, Andrew, you cannot get through this podcast without me talking about a little track and field. So we have the Penn Relays coming up this weekend where your Nittany Lions, the women, were the 4x800 meter relay champions. That really displays their depth and competitiveness in the middle distance. Coach John Dack has done a great job, and I'm sure they're going to be there competing and fighting hard to get that title behind the ladies. And I'm sure they're going to have Haley Kitchen on that anchor leg, and I'm sure she is going to crush it. So really excited to see how the Nittany Lions do this weekend down in Philadelphia. Also excited to see, I brought in a special shout out to Ethan. He's doing his first race and probably like 4 years. He's doing the Philly Broad Street Run, which is the Sunday after Penn Relays. So that is a big race down in Philly. That's a 10-mile road race, pancake flat, probably neck downhill overall. So that's a big event. So best of luck to the younger Vince trying to run really fast.
The younger Vince.
My younger brother, little Vince.
Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah. Good luck, Ethan. Good stuff for Penn Relays. I mean, just the historic event of almost all historic events when it comes to American running. So
yeah, love
nothing,
it.
And nothing less than you could say about that.
Yeah. And our track guys, your track guys are the guys who are making a difference on the football field. Not me as a distance runner, but guys like Julian Fleming, who are state runners up in the 100 meter dash and the long jump. That athleticism definitely translates. And I actually saw some footage of Julian Fleming burning Cooper DeJean on a route in the Ohio State game where he had a nice touchdown. So hoping to see more of that when he's in the blue and white and on the good guys.
Well, yeah, that's one of the major storylines too, right? Cooper's prospects as an NFL corner.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on Cooper DeJean out of Iowa? I think he's like, interesting.
His prospects as an Eagle or just in general?
Let's say as an Eagle. Well, we'll wrap things up. Who do you think the Eagles get this weekend?
Oh, man. I don't want the Eagles taking him, and it's not for the reason why everybody might think I'm saying this. I want an SEC corner. And, you know, so I want like a Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid. You're drinking the Kool-Aid, man.
I am, yeah. Because, like, Cooper's good. Like, don't get me wrong, but he looked really good. He looked his best against bad competition. Guys like McKinstry looked good consistently against some of the best competition in football. So I want a guy who is battle tested against like some of these wide receivers who, I mean, quite frankly, they're going to be seeing across from them on the NFL field. You're talking about guys like Malik Nabers. And I mean, granted, he's in the Big Ten, but I mean, like Marvin Harrison Jr. would have been absolutely a plug and play number one guy at any SEC school. Excuse me. So, you know, I want a guy who has more consistently good tape against the best competition. That's my take.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think for me, I think DeJean is going to be a stud safety at the NFL level. I think his body just looks like a safety, and I think he's also going to be a stud returner. You know, if he takes care of that fair catching thing and doesn't get called for BS fair catches, like, he's an athlete. And like, I forgot who I was listening to. I think it might have been Joel Klatt, actually. Joel Klatt was hilarious. Oh my God. Just listening to his mock, he's like, Cooper DeJean was Iowa's best offensive weapon. Their best chance to score a touchdown was him getting a pick six, which
that's funny.
They're right. Yeah. And anytime he talked about a Michigan guy or whenever he would talk about Chop, he'd be like, and this is why Michigan ran the ball 32 times against Penn State. Like, and I think he said that like several times, like, oh, they ran the ball like 32 times. I was like, he has that number like memorized down to, you know, down to his science. But so in terms of Eagles, though, I think if they do trade up for a corner, I think I'd like it to be Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo just seems to have a lot of Sauce Gardner vibes. And so a lot of analysts are saying they think he'll be better than Sauce. So if they could get him in that maybe 15-16 range with a trade up, I think that would be worth it. But at the end of the day, my prediction for where they draft, I think they might trade up and they might try to get a guy like Tylese Fuaga, the guard and tackle out of Oregon State. I think they're going to try to get a guy who they can put in guard right away, but then at the same time can maybe down the road replace Lane Johnson at the right tackle position, because he's definitely getting up there in age. And we know that Philly definitely believes in building through the offensive line. And, you know, they got all the pieces around the team, the left side of the offensive line. You got two Pro Bowlers. You got a Pro Bowler on your right side. You got Cam Jurgen sliding over to center, who we think will be solid. And right guard, they got some guys who they might be able to throw in there. But if you can get a stud there, and you're going to be feeling good about that line for a long time. And, you know, maybe Jeff Stoutland, they go a different direction because he's so good at developing players, and they find someone late that they like. So that's obviously a possibility. So I think you'd be between a secondary and maybe an offensive lineman that can fit in at guard, but also has that flexibility to swing over to tackle, because tackles are really hard to find. And I think this draft, you have a surplus of tackles, who there should be a solid one there at 22. But I think it's really important that they do find a guy that is capable of playing guard, because you don't want to waste those cheap years of the rookie deal. I think you're better at just getting a stud corner, for example. So I think that's going to be interesting. See which way the Eagles go, but that's the way I predict they'll go. I'll say Tylese Fuaga.
I think it's a solid prediction.
So you have the Kool-Aid and I got Fuaga.
Sorry, what was that?
You got Kool-Aid and I got Fuaga.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a handful of guys who I would be quote unquote happy with. I just kind of like to go with like some of the sure things out there, even though there is really no such thing as a sure thing when it comes to prospecting NFL players anymore. But yeah, so we'll see. I mean, it'll be exciting. We've got a couple days.
I think the only sure thing is Marvin Harrison Jr. He is the one guy who, like, if I had to like bet my life savings, I would bet him to be like a really good player. He was the only guy I'd be willing to like throw my entire life savings at. He's so good. I think the Bears are making a mistake by not taking him number one overall. I think
maybe they'll be trading up.
Maybe they could trade down with the Patriots or something. I mean, it's too late now because obviously they got rid of Justin Fields and you need a quarterback. But
they might trade up from 9. Like maybe they'll trade up to get back into like the top 5. Maybe they'll pull like a Texans.
Yeah, maybe they'll try. I mean, it's a possibility, but I think you're at number 9. You still are going to get a stud like Roma Dunze available there at 9, or potentially Olufoshanu if they want to, you know, get that offensive line going, make sure Caleb Williams stays healthy, because he does have, you know, DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. They do got some weapons now. Cole Kmet, DeAndre Swift at running back. So they got some weapons there. Offensive line solid. Olu would make it really good. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways they could go. But yeah, I do think that, man, like, I would take Marvin Harrison Jr. over anybody. Like, I think he's going to be, you know, a really, like, I think he has potential to be like a top 5 receiver in the entire NFL, like very early, if not like the best. Like, I think he might surpass Justin Jefferson in a few seasons.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about him.
Yep. Same.
Yep. So hate to be saying that about an Ohio State guy, but, you know, we keep it real here on the Nittany Blues podcast. Andrew, how can fans help us out?
Yeah. So the best way to help us out is by leaving a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening to this show from. Helps us out a lot, helps us grow our audience and expose the show to new listeners. So please go on there, leave a review, tell us some feedback, some things that you like, don't like about the show, maybe some things you want to hear more of. Always open to suggestions and feedback. Other great ways to help us out is by visiting our website, nittanyblues.com. You can learn more about the show. You can listen to all of our previous episodes. You can also visit our merch shop at shop.nittanyblues.com. We got some cool designs on there that we guarantee you'll find nowhere else. So go and check that out. To learn more about our partnership with the College Huddle, you can visit thecollegehuddle.com. I'll link that in the show notes. Other than that, we are on all forms of social media at Nittany Blues or Nittany Blues Podcast. So go and check this. Go and check that out for regular updates about the show. Vince posts pictures from his vantage points from the seats. And we're also sharing new episodes and appearances that we are making on the College Huddle podcast. So be sure to follow us on there. But Vince, I'm all set.
Thank you guys, as always, for listening. It starts with I love you. It ends with I love you. And we want to remind you that we are
the Nittany Blues podcast. We'll see you next time.